You're listening to Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about organizing web industry conferences and events with Ari Stiles and Christopher Schmidt of Environments for Humans. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com/click and use offer code CLICK.
Control Click would also like to thank Pixel and Tonic for being our major sponsor of the year. Hi, Leah. I'm not even going to ask you how you're doing because I think you're amazing since you're leaving tomorrow for an Ecuadorian vacation.
Yes, I am so excited. Well, actually, to be honest, I'm like half anxious. Half excited because it's kind of going to be an adventure vacation. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to go to, one of our plans is to go to the swing at the end of the world.
Ooh.
And I think that was one of those like things that people write in travel magazines, things to do before you die.
Oh, right.
Although I feel like I might actually die.
Yeah, I was going to say don't die.
Yeah, just Google swing at the end of the world and you'll see why I'm half excited, half anxious about that.
But. Well, I'm sure it'll be awesome. I went skydiving once and it was one of those, I was petrified, but I was like, I have to do it. My best friend from college, she's an avid skydiver and base jumper. She's got like, I don't know, I think it's like 500 jumps under her belt.
Holy.
And she spent 10 years trying to convince me to do it, and I finally broke down and do it. And here was how I got through it. I didn't think about it. I accepted I was going to do it, and I refused to think at all about it. I just went through the motions of getting my gear in place and doing all the lessons, and then I just did it. I didn't think about it. So don't think about it. Just do it.
Well, I think I might sit on the swing, but I don't know if I'll actually swing.
Because oh, come on.
There is this swing at the end of the world. It's not, well, it's a tourist thing, but it's really not a tourist thing because there's no safety harness. There's no safety. It's literally ropes, plank of wood on a tree that's perched at the edge of a cliff.
So. Okay. Well, do everything you can to come home.
Yes, I will try. I think I will.
We've got a ton of information to cover today and a bunch of news. So let's go ahead and dive into some news about content management systems. Since our last episode, Statamic has been super busy. They're releasing updates to their commercial search add-on Bloodhound, creating a new default theme called Acadia, and adding new screencasts. We'll have links in the show notes.
In Craft CMS news, there's a cool new site called Craft Cookbook. We'll have the link in the show notes. It essentially allows you to browse quote-unquote recipes, something very specific, like a quick solution to some sort of functionality like future event listings or like adding a file extension to a craft URL. So specific things that aren't really in the main documentation, because that's more for how the content management system works, which is more high level. So this site is more easy to bookmark than, say, the Google Plus group, which might have the like tiny how-tos. But now here it is all in one site. And it's actually quite a nice looking site, too.
Oh, cool. In Perch news, they're working on a new version of blog. New things include posts being completely template-driven and adding sections as another way to organize and filter posts. If you want to get in on the 4.0 beta, you should email Drew at hello@grabaperch.com.
And there's a lot of EE news this week. Mm-hmm. The biggest, of course, is that EE 2.8 is now out.
Awesome.
So we'll have a link to the show notes where it explains exactly what that means.
Cool.
And John McPherson of Media Surgery is gathering data on expression engine pricing. We'll have a link to that survey. So if you're an EE dev, consider taking a few minutes to complete this online survey, and we'll link to the show notes.
In more EE news, there are a few conferences coming up that have started to make the rounds in social media. The Expression Engine Conference issued a call for speakers, so if you have an interesting topic you'd like to discuss, contact Brad Parscale ASAP. No date has been set for the conference yet, but while you're waiting for that, there is a new EE conference in Leiden in June called G-Up. It's being run by community add-on superstar Lo. We'll have links in the show notes.
And again, with our theme of conferences for this episode, we have some exciting news regarding Peers Conference. Control Click Cast will be giving away one conference ticket to a lucky listener. Ooh. So if you want to qualify, please follow us on Twitter at ControlClickCast and the conference Twitter account at PeersConf, and we'll have more details in the coming weeks.
And as always, if we overlook news about a CMS you favor or are interested in, let us know and we'll get it on our radar for future episodes. Today, we're talking about putting together conferences and events with the masterminds behind Environments for Humans, Ari Stiles and Christopher Schmidt. Environments for Humans hosts the annual In Control Web Workshop Conference, as well as a series of online summits year-round, which brings some of the best and brightest minds together to create unique event experiences. Welcome to the show, Ari and Christopher. Thanks for joining us.
Cool. Thanks for having us. Yeah, awesome.
Good to be here.
So while Emily gave a brief bio about Environments for Humans, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about you guys as individuals? So why don't we start with Christopher?
I'm 6'7". I'm a Pisces. I like long walks on the beach.
And it's taking everything in my power to keep him from getting out of the chair and running to Ecuador. We looked at the pictures of the swing while you were talking about it. Yeah. Holy moly.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I've been a web developer since 1993, web designer. So, and then, but I follow sports, I guess. I'm a sports dude. But I get tired of dudes talking about sports.
Yeah, he's not that guy about sports. I just like sports.
I just like watching the game and then not talking about them for 24 hours. and then I like avoiding the gym. I find new ways to not go to the gym. That's my thing.
We're both pretty creative about that.
Yeah. And then when we travel, we've traveled a lot since we know each other. So I travel and find weird and new things to do. And so last year was like basically taking Ari to new places that I'd been before. So that was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
So
how about you, Ari?
Well, let's see. Well, currently, obviously, I'm working on conferences the majority of my time. But when I'm not doing that, I very much like yoga and meditation. And actually, South by Southwest is coming up. And that's one of my favorite times of year because I get to introduce yoga and meditation to a lot of new people because we schedule classes as part of South by Southwest as something that I started when I actually used to work for South by Southwest. So that's always fun for me because we get a lot of new people that show up and maybe have not tried before. And I work pretty hard at making it accessible to folks who maybe haven't done it before and also make the practice accessible to you no matter where you are. So rather than thinking about like special equipment or special places that you might be, I like to make it a little bit easier to attain. So let's see. And then I'm at home a lot. I work from a home office. I'm taking care of kids a lot of the time, too. So staying pretty busy.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So we mentioned earlier some of the conference you guys organize. But, and Ari, you sort of mentioned it, that you worked with South by Southwest. So how did you both get into the event organizing business in the first place?
Yeah, I've been doing web design for a long time. And then I've been speaking at conferences for a while, so I would go to conferences and I would see how things are run. And you go to some conferences where they just show up, open up your laptop, and then speak, and then you're done. Then some conferences will go and just go all out and have a nice experience. And so I was like just making mental notes as to which ones did a great job in terms of helping the speakers, but also helping curate the content a little bit better towards the attendees and what they were doing. And I actually made a bucket list to put on a conference.
Oh, cool.
And just say, like, I'm just going to do it. I don't care if it fails or whatnot. And I was on the board member. I was a board member for EIGA Cincinnati, which I'm not sure if people know what EIGA is, but it's a professional association for designers. And it doesn't have to be any specific type of designer. It could be web, graphic, print designer. And so it took me a year to convince them to do a web design conference in Cincinnati. And then I got the go-ahead to do it, which is really cool. But then I had 6 months to pull it together. Oh. By that time, I met Ari. And so Ari was a big help in putting that together. And so we got a big list of names. We had like Mark Trammell.
Stephanie, I was just looking Rose through the pictures the other day of that first one.
Yeah, we had like a lot of cool people there and awesome people speaking there. And we filled this room that we were told could fit 100 people. And when they were sitting down, we could only fit 60 people.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a lie. It's not the first time a venue lied to us about how many people they could fit.
So, and it was like a concrete art school building, art school. And so
everything about the room was hard. It was concrete floor, cedar those cinder block walls and
Cindy Lee was with us too. Yes. She flew in from San Francisco to help us out, and by the end of day two, it was like just a sweat box. I just remember it was just like all this human, you know, heat coming in there. But we did a survey.
Pure brain power.
After, you know, which is always good to do surveys, you know, mm-hmm. how you did. And everyone loved it. Mm-hmm. It was like, wow. It was just the greatest. I've never seen, like, people just loved it, everything about it. So, mm-hmm. and we made sure that people had a good time. Food was there. We really handpicked the speakers to get the best that we could. And after that, it was pretty good. But then around that time, we were planning this conference. It was called In Control Cincinnati. I was like, I saw a conference, an online conference, put on by Arl Balkan. Mm-hmm. What was it called?
Head.
Oh, it was the Head conference with like mm-hmm. nice angle brackets on the left and right side. Mm-hmm. They called it Head, so it was like geeky. And he was crazy because he did 2 days, two tracks.
He'll tell you he was crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. And so he had a lot of helpers. But he was just running around doing like 24 hours. I don't know what it was crazy. But he asked me to speak.
They did a full weekend all day long for 2 days. So essentially 48 hours with three tracks online. It was insane.
Yeah. So I volunteered to speak and I spoke in my apartment to like my presentation I usually give to a crowd. And it was really great. You know, I was looking at the chat, you know, chat room and all that stuff. And once I was done, I had to fight this urge to go to my room, pack up my stuff, and head to the airport. Because that's what you do. Like, I go to a flight, you go to different places, and you pack up, and you go. I'm like, well, I did my speech, you know. Time to go pack. And so I actually leave my apartment and go out to lunch. Because that was my... I had to, like, wrap up this... I do my routine, right? I do the routine.
In some way, right?
Yeah, so I thought, like, this is so powerful that we have to continue this in some way. And so as we were doing this In Control Cincinnati, right, which is a logistical nightmare to do for the first time, I told Ari, he's like, hey, we should do an online conference with CSS nerds. And
yeah, because we immediately had that comparison right away of online versus on-site.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, because he was like, hey, I just did this head thing, and it was so... Mm-hmm. quick,
right?
You know,
yeah. And so I know a lot of CSS people because mm-hmm. I'm a big CSS nerd. I wrote the CSS cookbook mm-hmm. for O'Reilly, and you know, if you have to write a CSS cookbook, and if you write anything cookbook for O'Reilly, you're a big nerd about that topic. It doesn't matter. You know, you just have to, like, at the end of it, you're like, I'm a huge nerd.
It's your confession,
right?
Really.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then so I asked all these friends, you know, to help me out and say experiment and see how it goes. And it was we went to actually. University of Cincinnati.
Yes.
Hosted us, and it was just, I attribute it, this is not a really great technical term, but afterwards I had a whole bunch of warm fuzzies about it. It was just like, it was so great that people...
That's how I felt after my first online summit with you guys, because it was one of those experiences where, I mean, I did it from my condo, I was in my pajamas, I didn't have to stand up in front of a bunch of people, which always freaks me out. And I felt connected from the chat room. So keeping with that idea of this online conference, Ari, what are some of the special needs for an online conference?
Something that we've found is that we definitely do still have that feeling of community. And so occasionally we get, because it's still a relatively new concept for a lot of people, we get people kind of poo-pooing it, like, oh, you can't sit around and have a beer together afterward, that sort of thing. And to that I say, rubbish. what I think part of the what works well for us is that we're doing one subject at a time. And so I think part of the warm fuzzies that come from that is that we have the people that are coming are obviously very interested in that topic. If they're willing and interested to sit through 6 to 8 hours of talks on that one subject, you know, they're really into it. And so because of that, a lot of times the attendees are thrilled to find each other. So obviously, the attendees need a great connection. They're going to have a better experience as long as they have lovely bandwidth. If they participate in social media, they're going to have a better experience throughout. You know, I mean, we go on and on about the back channel as conference organizers, and there are plenty of people who have a problem with it, but I don't. I think it's a great way for people to connect with each other. And a lot of what conferences are about are the attendees finding each other. And I think that's, for the attendees, what makes the conference experience great, whether you're on-site or online. And then for the speakers, we need a little bit more. We go through and do a tech check with each of our speakers, and we have developed some bandwidth requirements over the years. You know, like we've noticed that this works better, XYZ, you know, so we have a document where we've just kind of listed all of that information. But I, especially when someone's brand new to it, I sit with them for about a half an hour going through, here are all the features of Adobe Connect, and these are the things that might make your presentation go a little bit easier, that sort of thing. We find that speakers, especially when they've never done it before, have a lot of trepidation about it. And
That's when we tell them it's about, you can speak in your pajamas.
That's right. Pants are optional. And, you know, for some people that puts them at ease, I don't know. But we find that once we go through that and just kind of help them enough with the technology so that the technology gets out of the way of their performance and they can focus on what they need to talk about, a lot of the speakers end up finding out that it's a very satisfying experience for them afterward, even if they had some nerves about it or were nervous about how they might come across online.
I would have to say, as someone who's spoke at one of your online summits, as a speaker, especially if you're just starting out new and if you're not familiar with it, one of the things that I really liked about speaking in an online conference was the fact that no one can see that I have my notes up. You know, when you're preparing to speak in person, you kind of have to semi-memorize, do all those kind of preparations for speaking. But when you're doing an online conference, you can have your notes right in front of you so you don't miss a point. The likelihood of missing a point when you're, you know, in person because you're not reading out your notes is much higher than when you're literally semi-reading your notes because they can't tell.
Right. Well, just in general, too, I think that speaks to the comfort of it. And I think that it's interesting because we've had, you know, a handful of speakers that have maybe given the same talk to a live audience, maybe at one of our conferences, and online. And I can tell you that there's something about the online talk that's always a little bit more low key. Maybe you're in your own environment. Like you said, you'd be able to look at your notes. And, you know, there's something to be said from just being in that comfortable place. And I think it plays into the whole being with the also being with a group of people that are really into the topic too, I think is relaxing for everyone there. Because one of the things that always gets me whenever I see someone talk is they get up and they kind of like apologize for what they're into, you know? And a lot of times people do it to just break the tension, you know? And I mean, you know, even here we're like, hey, I'm totally a nerd about conferences and I apologize, but not really. So I think that's something that people tend to do to break the ice. But when you end up with when you're with a group of people, either on site or online, that are really into that particular topic, that there's less of that feeling of, is this okay that I'm really into this? Because everyone there is.
Now, I'm just curious real quickly, you mentioned Adobe Connect. That's the main tool you guys use right now. Was that what you've used from the beginning or had you tried others?
No.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. No, we went with another software, which was called DimDim.
And when Leia spoke for us that first time, we were using DimDim. That's what made me think about it.
And the brilliant joke was that it was DumDum. So that was, it was bought by...
Say that now since it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it was bought by Salesforce.com, was it?
I can't remember who bought it.
They bought it, and I have, like, no idea why they bought it. But that was so weird. Like, the features that would change from one release to another. It was a bad user interface.
Yeah, and so, I had a customer service call with them once in which I explained all the problems we'd had at a particular event. Chris was listening. Speaking of times that people curse, Chris was listening. And the gentleman on the other end of the line spent 20 minutes trying to convince me that I hadn't actually had the problems that were documented by me and by the attendees. I was, you know... amazed. That was one of the more interesting customer service calls.
So we actually did three conferences, online summits. We call our online conferences summits just so people would know, like when they hear the word summit, they know it's like an online conference. I think that's just the way we rolled since the beginning. But we did three online summits, and then one for CSS, one was a general DIY for web developers, and the other one was a jQuery, like official jQuery online summit. Mm-hmm. And so after that, I think we started researching.
Well, I think jQuery was the nail in the coffin for we can't use this software anymore. Yeah, so, it was awful.
Yeah. And so we did some research. We looked at everything that was on the market at that time. And we went with Adobe Connect. There was a lot of solutions that did a lot of one thing very well.
They would do one feature fabulously.
Yeah. So there was one app that had like full featured video. You had like 10 video streams going on at once. But everything else was terrible. Like, you couldn't chat. They didn't have anything for files or anything. It was just, so it was really great for just video conferencing, but it wasn't really great for conference that the way that we do conferences. And so Adobe Connect was kind of like this happy medium, like for everything, like compromise for everything. And so we've grown with it. They've grown up a long, long ways in the years that we've used them. And so, and kind of a short story back, but I remember the first time we actually did an online conference. We were traveling to our location. It was the CSS Summit, for the first annual CSS Summit. And I was making a speech in my head, going to apologize to everyone for failure. Which is like, this is not going to work.
You had the worst case scenario
And it's been great ever since. I don't think we've never not had a conference online work. We've had some issues with things happen, but with like maybe a speaker or a session like that. But it's always been working. So, but yeah.
And people really hang in there, too, I will say, that we've had the occasional strange thing happen. And people really hang in. And I think because of the convenience of it, and also because they're, again, so happy to kind of be with their tribe. Right. We've had, because occasionally, you know, like just the speaker's audio will drop out or something crazy happens in their neighborhood and their connection goes down or something like that. And so there's this level of camaraderie in the chat room and on social media about it. People hang in there and we just always find a way to kind of make it up. I think in the 5 years of doing this, we've had twice we've had to re-record just one talk out of like a day's full of talks. Right. You know, so little things come along and we've had to roll with it, but it's pretty rare.
Yeah, and I would say as a speaker tip, as well as I guess as a business owner too, I think is when you get on speaker, when you get on stage, you get the nerves, you know, and you try to speak. The tip I got from Molly Hochschlag like a long time ago, and I always carry that with me when I go on stage, is that remember that you're there to help people learn. I feel the same way when we put on a conference. Like, we really want people to learn. We're really helping them. And if people feel that from you, they want you to win. They want you to do a great job with your presentation, helping, you know, do your job and stuff like that. So it's, as long as you're earnest about what you're trying to do, the respect will be there both ways.
So let's compare the online challenges and considerations with an on-site event. What's unique about, especially compared to online, about an on-site event?
The logistical nightmare.
Of an on-site. Challenges, not nightmare.
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah,
nudge.
Not challenges, yeah. There's so many logistics that you have to do. You actually have to go to a venue. You actually have to put it on. You actually deal with more people. Because when we do an online event, we actually, you know, handle all the production ourselves.
Yeah, so just the two of us can do an online event. When we start to get into on-site events, we pull in other people to help us out.
Right. And so, and that has to do with a lot of logistics, and we have to... Mostly with online events, we have to deal with time zone issues and so that. But now we have with on-site conferences, we have to fly speakers in, make sure their arrangements get there. I mean, we do CSS DevConf. Last time we did it in the Stanley Hotel, which is the inspiration for Stephen King's Shining, which is a beautiful venue, which happens to be a mile and a half up in the from sea level. And I found out that I get altitude sickness. And so that was pretty fun for no one. So Ari was the one who had to do like 99% of the work. And I was, I'll be in this room and I'll try not to die. And so.
Yeah, so we just stationed him in one of the the biggest of the track rooms and just brought him things when we could. And you emceed that room and I just ran around for the hotel itself is kind of set up like a campus. It had several buildings, and so I was just running in between.
Yeah, so I was going to write a horror story because I was like, have altitude sickness. I can't do anything, but I'm trapped in this room that is haunted, that is known to be haunted, and everyone has gone out to lunch, and I can't move or do anything. So that's my story. I was going to do that. So, but not every place we do is haunted. But, but yeah, so there's a lot more logistics we have to deal with, and a lot more more planning involved and some of that. So it's a lot more work than an online version.
Well,
but,
yeah,
but just online summit though is the day of is just so many plates are spinning and
And well, what's interesting about an on-site event is that, and I mean this in a good way, because I'm fine and am pleased to be responsible for a lot of things. It's kind of like everything is up to you. So if there's something wrong with the food, it's on you. If there's something wrong with the room, it's on you. And it like kind of seeps into the social media channel and all that sort of thing.
Is that what you mean about bringing people on to help you so it's not just you?
Right. Obviously, the venue has a lot of responsibility. And so...
I mean, the vendors.
And right. And all the vendors have a lot of responsibility. And so this is where you're not going to do anything that we decided a couple of years ago. We're not going to do anything sight unseen anymore after being burned on a couple of small details. And so we go now and we do site visits just to make sure that, little things from like there is nothing like walking through the actual space just to make sure that the things you have in mind are going to work. Plus, it gives you new ideas.
Right. The reason to do an on-site visit is one thing we're both concerned about is wayfinding and how an attendee will get to the hotel or venue or whatever, what they do next. Like, what steps do they need to take to go to the registration booth? What steps do they need to take to go? What do they need to do next after that? During the conference itself, where they're going to be for lunch, where do we want them to go? Is there space for it? I remember we did In Control of Hawaii with AIGA Honolulu, which is not too bad. And we had to solve a major problem of we have all these people coming. We have nowhere to put them for lunch. And so we had to figure out where in this venue we're going to put all these people.
And then the solution that they had for us, I mean, it was beautiful once you got there, but it was this long and winding pathway with stairs and all this stuff, And so I was like, hey, what if I have somebody who shows up in a wheelchair? What are you going to do then? And, and we also always have volunteers when we're on site as well. And we, as a side note, we just kind of use that as a way for students who may not otherwise be able to attend. As long as they're able to help out a little bit with the conference, then they can attend the rest for free. But I had to assign a couple of volunteers, and usually we don't have to do this, to walk people to lunch.
Wow.
Because it was kind of a long and winding way to get there. Once they got there, they were thrilled because it was a gorgeous view of the beach while they ate their lunch.
Right.
But little considerations like that pop up pretty regularly when you do on-site.
Yeah, so for on-site, we took a lot of consideration into the experience of the person that were either there. And so we try to make sure we utilize the city, the location that we're there. So this is at Conf and the Stanley Hotel. We made sure it was a haunted hotel, but we made sure to get a ghost tour of the hotel. Mm-hmm. Also, really good camping stuff. So we had s'mores. Mm-hmm. We also had, if you know the history of The Shining, there's a scene where a kid goes on a tricycle or a big wheel bike and goes through. So we actually had an adult big wheel race at the Stanley Hotel, which is the first time they ever did it. We're no one's ever asked this. We are either huge nerds or we...
Right. That's my other thing is I really love horror movies and just movies in general, but I'm kind of a horror buff. And so I know The Shining a little too well. And so that was one of the things we asked on our site visit. And we thought it's one of those things where it's like, hey, I'm kind of into this, but could we have a big wheel or tricycle race or whatever? And the women who were there that were taking on us around the hotel just kind of looked at each other. And we thought, oh, great. We're completely crazy. And, And she said, no, actually, we have some big wheels for adults in storage that we've been trying to figure out what to do with them because everybody's getting tired of stepping over them. And so it's weird. It turned into we did it for the first time as an event, and they came out and photographed it and came up with an official track to use. And now they offer it as a regular event at the Stanley Hotel if you decide to take a group there.
So before we go on, we'd like to take a moment again to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. In the last episode, I mentioned that Squarespace is hiring for about 30 open positions, and they're trying to sweeten the pot with also flying in a spouse or partner for a long weekend in New York if you're one of the chosen applicants to be interviewed. So if you're a dev engineer, try to get your application in ASAP, since it looks like they're closing interviews March 15. In the meantime, if you want to try the service out, they're giving our listeners a free trial and 10% off the first purchase. Just go to squarespace.com/click and use offer code CLICK. Now back to the topic at hand.
So regardless of whether it's online or in person, how do you decide, I guess specifically for the summit, since you say they are on a single topic, but how do you decide on those topics? Is it something where you're keeping tabs on industry interests or areas where you both feel personally are important and that drives the decision, or even feedback from past attendees?
Yeah, so actually one of the things that if you ever attend a summit is that we do a survey follow-up, and one of the things we really ask our attendees is that what topics do they want for us to look into doing another summit for? And our first year or two that we did it, accessibility came up from our own attendees. And so we, with Glenda Sims's help, who is a big accessibility advocate, we put together Accessibility Summit. And we've been doing that for about 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And someone else mentioned, or they recommended web performance.
Yes.
And so we did that. And so kind of like we do 10 to 20% new summits every year. Mm-hmm. And this year we're actually, this is news.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, we're actually doing
getting the scoop.
You get the scoop. We're actually doing a craft CMS summit.
Ooh, nice.
Later this year. So probably announced, we'll probably publish that later today. But yeah, so we're doing that, and that's going to be awesome. But we also have, we kind of put in our schedule to make sure we have new ideas and new topics into each year. And some, you know, are just so great that we keep them each year. So CSS Summit is going to be doing its sixth year this year. JavaScript, which is kind of grew out of jQuery, because jQuery is so ubiquitous now. But JavaScript Now Summit is going to be in its sixth year. And so we're doing WordPress Summit. We're doing a whole bunch of cool things like that. So.
But there's also plenty of paying attention to trends as well. We go to a lot of conferences just because we're interested. I mean, it's not just that, you know, we do them. We also really like them after all these years, too. And so it's fun to go to conferences. I can tell you that it's really fun to go to one and not be responsible and just enjoy. Yeah. But we tend to, if we go to something, just kind of have a game plan and deliberately go see different talks. And at the end of the day, just kind of like talk out loud about it, like, hey, you know, I saw this, you know, new topic or new speaker that I thought was really interesting. And so it's kind of like, I will say that Chris does a lot, is focused a lot more on the content of what we're doing. And so he tends to choose the lineups, and we both kind of roll out, float the idea for a new topic, I'll say. And then I have a really, really like an elephant's memory, seriously. And so if he's stuck, like, hey, I've got one or two more slots that I need to fill or whatever, I can usually just, my mental Rolodex will spit out, hey, you know, I saw so-and-so talk about this topic, and she did a wonderful job, or that sort of a thing.
Right.
And so it's really fun to do. I think a lot of Kathy Sierra used to give this talk about how the words that she used, pardon my language, but the word she used is that you help your users kick ass. And so if we are helping people kick ass every day with the content that we're bringing to them, bravo, that's exactly what I'd like to do.
Yeah, for our summits, we are probably your boss's favorite friend, I guess, because we really want to put content out there for summits, because we have summits where a whole team can buy a ticket and just get caught up on what's going on that year, all the changes that's happened, or learn new techniques. And so the best thing that one of the things that we knew that we were on the right track was the jQuery Summit the first year, and we got feedback saying my whole team saw jQuery Summit and they were able to solve a problem the next day. And so that's like five people times 8 hours worth of work for each of them to solve a problem, and they were able to just nail it. And so, like, that's like 40 hours worth of work that they didn't, you know, that they saved pretty much. And so that was, makes it so much worthwhile for us to do it. And as for picking speakers, I do a lot of research. You know, I'm out there you know, just looking through a whole bunch of notes, articles, blogs, trying to find out what's interesting and what's not. Like Nicole Sullivan, I never heard of Nicole Sullivan until our first CSS summit. And she talked about object-oriented CSS. Mm-hmm. And everyone, we have a little chat room going on while we do our summits, which is usually kind of like happy, you know, people talk, there's a good stream. That was the first time ever I've seen a chat room go dead quiet.
And we were panicking. We were like, is something broken?
Yeah, everyone was quiet because they were so interested in what Nicole had to say about her topic. And she ran long and no one cared.
Yeah, and we didn't stop her. And that we were like, maybe it's a good thing. We crossed our fingers. And then when she was finished, it just exploded in the chat room and on Twitter. Mm-hmm. It was just like, whoa, you know, Nicole Sullivan just blew my mind, yeah. You know. And so that's exactly the type of content, the type of feeling we want people to have. It's right. Like, and how awesome is it to send that to somebody's desktop? That's great. And now on mobile devices too, apparently.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm curious now, so you've chosen the topic, you've figured out what kind of speakers in general you may want to have. Let's talk promotion. How do you start promoting these events and these topics?
Well, I do want to go back one second and say our CSS Dev Conference is actually community voted on talks. So we actually do double blind voting for CSS Dev Conf. So people will submit proposals for that. So we're actually putting on a party and we don't know who's coming. To speak. So people submit proposals and we make a double blind that we strip out their name and who they work for. And we just put in a vote the content alone. And so that way we get content that people really want to
But that's,
receive.
Yeah, that's an excellent segue from content to promotion, yeah. Though, too, Leia, is that the content for that one, you know, obviously the community votes on it. But because the community votes on it, they talk about it publicly. Mm. Right. And so that's one of the things that we like about it. I mean, the one thing for me that was missing after leaving South by Southwest was that I liked being able to work on smaller conferences. For me personally, it was much easier for me to guarantee good experience for everyone that was coming. But one of the things about it was that all of the conferences, summits, online stuff, and on-site stuff that we had set up, it wasn't anyone's first speaking gig. Everyone that we were getting, and that's good, and it's still the same way, was a very experienced speaker. And now with CSS DevConf, because it's community voted, you know, occasionally we do get somebody who's new. As long as they have a great idea, you know, it interests enough people, then they tend to rise high in the voting. And so that for me kind of filled in a niche as far as getting newer speakers. But again, that one, it's interesting because, you know, we work to choose a good location and crow about that as much as we can in our promotions. But the people who submit and vote because they're speaking about it publicly, that's a form of promotion as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you should probably talk about the general channels that we use, too.
Yeah, so we talk to anyone who will listen to us. And so we do social media. We do email, news blasts, and blogs. We talk to industry publications like Smashing Mag and O'Reilly and stuff like that. So we talk to a whole bunch of people to help us spread the word about there. And really, it's as long as we put out a good product, people will, based on the feedback, it will come back again. And so we've had people who've been with us for 5 years, and it says a lot about, I think, what we do and the quality of the product that we put out.
Along the same lines of promotion, do you consider the promotion that you do for each event branded for that event? Do you have like an identity, or is it more like an environments for humans identity that you push through everything?
Good question. I think the summits are kind of milquetoast, I guess, in branding. Because it's really hard to invest a lot into brands. I think we do.
That's more of an overarching, summit series brand.
Yeah. So we do what's called summit series, and so every year it's a new thing. So our summits aren't really branded to the event itself because we let the technology or the practice speak for itself. So you have a CSS. Mm. If you're interested in CSS, great. You're probably interested in this. If you're not interested in CSS, you probably will not like CSS Summit. So, whereas our on-site events, we kind of brand each individually. And so, CSS Dev Conf has its own kind of way, personality, if you will. Mm-hmm. InControl has its own unique personality. And then now we've worked with Jennifer Robbins to do Artifact Conf, which has its own kind of unique, quirky personality. And actually, I think CSS Dev Conf is quirky, I think. Yeah. Artifact is cool and laid back.
Yeah, Artifact is cool.
Yeah.
Is that branding stuff you guys do on your own, or do you hire like an external firm to help you out with that?
We actually do it on our own, and it's, I wish we had clones of ourselves. That'd be great to help do that. We actually, our Artifact conference, our artifactconf.com is, we worked with, we are working with Sparkbox to come up with a new website. And make it more responsive. And just because we did two conferences last year, we have a whole bunch of content that we need to put out there, like video recordings and a whole bunch of history we need to put up there. So they actually worked with us. And so we're actually hoping to launch this week as well. So so that's news there.
Yeah.
We have a new site for Artifact Conf.
Scoop number two.
Yeah, as well as Craft CMS Summit. So that's coming out. So that's the first time we actually reached out for that. We're actually working on a new redesign for ourselves. For E4H, and so we're actually working out with a company locally to do that, and that's actually built on Craft.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yeah. Scoop number three.
Yeah. Man, who knew all these scoops?
We need to have, like, sound effects or something.
Even if it's just a little Law and Order, dun-dun thing, or whatever.
So marketing kind of leads towards ticket sales, obviously. I want to talk a bit more about the dollars and cents of running a conference. Well, anecdotally, we understand it's an expensive endeavor to create a conference, especially since the budget, majority of it, should probably come from the ticket sales. So I would have to ask, how would you know what and how to budget, especially when you need to book venues and such ahead of time before tickets are even purchased? Like, do you try to hit a minimum number of ticket sales? Is there always like a magic number in mind?
Well, we have, when we got started, like Christopher was saying, the first one was through AIGA. Mm-hmm. And so since AIGA is a nonprofit, they're used to doing a lot of like space donations and things like that. And so we actually, you know, we lucked out in that our first space, the one that we were talking about being so concrete-ish before, was donated. Mm-hmm. And so we lucked out there and really just needed a little bit of money to be able to feed everyone and get people on planes to fly their, you know, speakers. Right. And then our first few summits, we just paid for out of our own pockets, essentially, because all we needed to do was have the account with Dim Dim at the time.
Right. And well, I will say, speaking of money issue, if it wasn't for MailChimp sponsoring us, we wouldn't be here. Because MailChimp took a risk on us.
Yeah.
I guess, and they sponsor a lot of great things around here. But and they helped us finance the first three online summits. And so when they were able to get us through. So it's been really great for them. So for them and for us, really. So. But another thing is this, if you're looking to do an event, I would just, in Austin, I see this all over the places, I would contact local businesses that have big, that need big space. Like, I believe our JavaScript meets at Frog Design here, and the office is here. We have Capital Factory, which is where we have an office, but they have plenty of meeting space, and they actually want people in the tech industry to come meet
there. So if you find a space that wants to align with a brand like yours or what you're doing, then that's, you know, just in general, when people are getting started, I tell them to start small.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you went for a small space and you completely sold it out and filled it up, then you have ammunition to do it larger next time.
Right. And also check out like co-working spaces.
Yeah.
Too. I mean, because some of them will be free at night and great for conference, just for like one meetup for like one or two presentations. Because our Refresh Austin is pretty popular and they meet up.
But we have, just for our, you know, every company is going to set its own standards, but just for our list that we check off is that we always feed everyone lunch because we like to keep them together rather than having that whole lunch diaspora thing where everybody runs off and does their own thing. But that's actually a way to save money. If you don't want to feed everybody, you know, that's actually a huge chunk out of your budget, you know, and so it can be, you know, if that's not imperative to you, then that's a huge way to save money. Swag is a big thing. I think that a lot of, and swag is the stuff we all get term that a lot of people throw around. I don't want to align it with the swagger slang.
But our swag is swagger.
But our swag occasionally has swagger. Yeah. But so we are unapologetic t-shirt nerds, but even we have in our brains that, okay, we're not going to buy t-shirts for this one unless we sell X amount of tickets, you know, mm-hmm. because that's a way to save money as well. Mm-hmm. Right. And so there's little things that we cut out of our budget to make things, make ends meet.
Yeah, we're also annoying to sponsors because we we want to make sure that our swag is practical.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so for In Control, this is what we do for In Control is, since I published a lot of books, I've written a lot of books. I haven't published any books. I've written a lot of books. I know a lot of publishers, and so they are able to donate books. And so for In Control, we give out a book to each person who signs up, who shows up. And so we get, and we choose a lot of good books from different mm-hmm. publishers. And so they're not like really bad books, I don't think. So
yeah, another practice that actually helps a lot with budgets is something that we don't do. But if it works out well for your conference or your whatever it is that you're trying to put together, some companies, if they can speak, are glad to spend a lot as a sponsorship as well. And so we don't do that simply because that's kind of the model that we put ourselves into, because that's, in the past, we've been to other conferences and seen that occasionally that can be kind of a hit or miss thing, because sometimes it's like this great, I'm going to show you this really cool tool mm-hmm. That's really going to help you. And other times it's a sales pitch and a lot of people don't want to sit through that.
Yeah, that can just, you can just really, the energy level can just really be zapped pretty fast.
Right. And so we don't do it just because of the unpredictability of it. But if it's something that, if you're getting started out and you know that there's a particular tool that would be glad to sponsor you, if only they could have anywhere from 5 minutes to a full hour on stage, and you're comfortable with that, that is a great way actually to cover costs. Right. For people who are interested in that.
Now, a few minutes ago, Chris, you mentioned that you're building a new site. It's going to run on Craft. Now, I'm curious, each of your events, it's like its own website. It's like a subdomain. Are you using a CMS to manage each of those events? Is that what you're like revamping right now? Or is it an existing system you're just going to continue running with?
Well, my existing system was duct tape CMS.
This is an amazing database.
Yes. It is a seat of my pants, duct tape together CMS that has really been, it's just really embarrassing. So
this, it gets the job done.
So Crafts is actually going to be helping us a lot. I actually, my goal for this week is to enter all the values into the CMS, into the database for Craft is my goal, because our partners, the people we're teaming up with Tyco, they really don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, so we're using, so our new website is going to be more database run. It's going to be a lot smoother for us. Mm-hmm. Also, we have a lot of pain points. I just be open the kimono, if I may. Just that is that we have a lot of pain points in terms of new users who register and don't really know what to do when they come to a summit for the first day. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like kind of a weird thing. So we're actually having user profiles. We're going to have an archive of recordings that they sign up for. And so they can just log in and go to the session the day of the event now, instead of having to wait for an email and wait for us to do it. So
nice. It's
actually going to be, once we get that done, I think we'll eliminate most of the stress points, a lot of the complaints that we have from our attendees and stuff like that. And
do you anticipate this CMS to ever handle your actual event registration?
Yeah, well, actually, it will. We were talking to
Down the road, but yeah.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of back-end stuff with, they have some great programmers there and helping a lot of API issues back and forth. So we're dealing with WConnect's API, we're dealing with Eventbrite's API. Eventbrite's API is well documented, really great. WConnect's a little bit documented. So we're doing a lot of like black box magic is what and not really, but there's so much. So, but Craft is there to handle everything and do most of that stuff.
So I think that is, I don't have the phases in front of me. We have kind of rollout phases, and I think that's in phase 3.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. So we're hoping to build and grow with Craft.
Yeah, I'm sure something like that's going to always be better than something you maybe hand rolled years ago and you've just duct taped together. Oh,
man. You have no idea. It's just like, it is embarrassing.
I mean, so would that be something you'd recommend to someone, that if this is something they're going into, they're going to be managing multiple events, that it's something that they should invest in?
Yeah, well, I think like technologies that are out there now are just amazing, from like Handlebar to grunt to mm-hmm. doing all that stuff. That like it's just amazing what's out there. And one of the things I love about working with Smartbox is that they're so smart, and people like Tycho's is that you get to see what's going on with every mm-hmm. with latest technologies. But there's so many, like, I'm just a big fan of grunt and handlebars and right. and templating, and just everything you do to automate stuff. Is within the last year and a half of just seeing the web industry grow, it amazes me after being in this industry for 20 plus years to see what happened just in a year and a half, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just blows my mind.
So. Well, also I think that was a lot of the motivation behind the clean start for Artifact and working with Sparkbox, is that we're just getting started with Artifact. I mean, it's been a year and we're sitting on some content there, and we feel like it has a potential to be a very long running conference, you know, and go for several years. And so it's kind of like we're starting it well and cleaning house from the beginning, because for us, just the two of us running Environments for Humans, and we're sitting now on 5 years of content mm-hmm. that we're trying to shift into something new, and it's just huge. And so I think that doing it right this early on when you're first beginning is, mm-hmm. is one of the things to think about, because you generate so much content when you do something like this. Even if you aren't recording sessions, you still have slides from speakers that you usually keep at least an archive of if you're not sharing, and yeah. you know, and all those sort of things need to be thought out as well.
Yeah, and also it's with when we did our first on-site event, we just, you know, we looked at everything, we tabulated everything, and you just have to roll the dice, you know, and see what happens, and just mm-hmm. see what kind of event happens. So you just don't know the personality of the event, and the attendees bring their personalities to it, and each one is unique. We just did In Control Orlando, the fifth year that we did In Control Orlando, and that was probably the most fun I've ever had at In Control. And some of them are, you know, some of the controls have been kind of different, like personality-wise. Like some of them have been roller coaster rides in terms of gut checks. Like Leslie Immon does that great talk about schools mm-hmm. and educations and education systems. And it was just like she brings so much into it, and you just feel the weight mm-hmm. of the emotion mm-hmm. of the of audience. And with Artifact Conference, the first year we did it was at the Alamo Ritz, which is a theater, and which is a great kind of awesome tradition. And the first session was with, I think, Dan Moll. Was it doing a roundtable? Was he doing a Q&A with a panel?
Well, after Jen's talk.
Yeah, about it. Yeah, after Jen's intro talk. And the Q&A from the audience, from the attendees, was so intelligent and so with it as to what he was talking about mm-hmm. that it was the most amazing Q&A I've ever seen happen at a conference. And that happened so early in the conference, of a two-day conference, just blew my brain. And it set the tone for the rest mm-hmm. of the 2 days. And so it was just a great event. And so you plan as much as you want, but you just never know, you know, it's, you know, I guess it's like having a baby. You just don't know who's going to show up, you know, what the personality of the baby's going to be mm-hmm. until then.
But speaking of that, though, like even if, you know, there's so many personality and so many things that you can try to plan for, it's still kind of unpredictable. Still, though, I'm curious if you and Ari have any type of contingency plans in case, like, you just anticipate, okay, what if this weather-related issue happens, or what if this technical issue happens? Like, do you have a list saying, okay, if this, whatever? And what are those?
I could totally, as a first, like, in the beginning, you know, when I was, like, we're on our way to do our online summit, the CSS summit, for the first time, I was, like, making that speech about, this is going to be failed, or sorry, guys, apologize, sorry, it didn't work out. And after doing the online summits, we've had things happen where the software would just quit on us and die. But Ari was just magical on that one. I don't know. But she was able to, like, work her magic on WConnect and get everything straightened out. And so people didn't know what was happening. But we were, like, frantically, like, doing some weird stuff in the background. And there's some other events where we had a speaker who was supposed to be flying, and he was calling me. And I was like, you're supposed to be up in the air. What's going on? And I'm like, he had a medical emergency, and he couldn't make it. And so we had to mm-hmm. ask, you know, find someone to replace him at the last minute. And that was, it worked out, you know, knock on wood. Mm-hmm. And knock on wood, it keeps on going that. But when, and this is something I kind of learned in grad school getting my project management certificate, is that it doesn't matter too much about you want to make sure you get all your, you know, dot your I's and cross your T's as much as you can. That still won't make a project successful. What will make it successful is you have the attitude as, I'm going to take on any issue and I'm going to meet it head on. I'm not going to duck or swerve away from it.
You take responsibility.
So it just, you just have to, you know, when a problem comes, you just have to just see if you can find a solution to it. So we've had speakers drop out on a day before an event.
Yeah.
Just like out of the blue.
How we've had them drop out hours before.
Yeah, hours before an event. So that was always nice. And that's always like a, would you like some caffeine or would you like a speaker dropout? Like, I'll take a caffeine.
I'm awake now.
Yeah. So you just have to roll with it. And I think the first 2 years we did this, I was like a worrywart. I was like a big ball of nerves. Now I'm like, okay, we're just going to, it's going to happen. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. We know what we can do to avoid, to mitigate issues. Mm-hmm. But something's going to happen. If it's going to happen, we're going to work with it.
Yeah, and actually, I think this is a little bit of a step back, but I think that one of the best contingency plans is to really know your boundaries. I mean, and that's more about dealing with, you know, like occasional like conflicts that come up between people or with a particular individual or that sort of thing is, you know, obviously for online events, we're running a chat room. And for an on-site event, you've got a room full of people that are going to be together for 2 to 3 days. And so you have a mental picture and or a set of boundaries about whether it's behavior, all of those conduct concerns, that sort of thing. And you have it, you know, within you and it affects your behavior. And I think that's also, it's something that you exude as a conference in general, but you choose speakers that kind of wouldn't necessarily have a problem with that sort of thing. And also on the rare occasion when something does come up, you know that this is not something that's going to work within the context of the environment that you've laid out, the atmosphere that you've set up for the people in your group. And so you just kind of have to deal with it when it comes and be firm. And so fortunately, it's been extremely rare. But, you know, we're very aware and pay attention to a lot of those like personality conflicts and things that come up, things like sexism within the industry and the way things are portrayed sometimes, trade shows, for example. And so just being very careful about those sort of things and working with people who have a lot of the same values around that sort of thing.
Is that something that you felt a need to, I guess, mention to attendees and speakers before they make a commitment to attend an event?
Yeah, we keep it simple. I think when you throw down a whole bunch of rules, you're just inviting a little bit of trolling behavior, you know, whether it's in person or online. I think that that's true because you're always going to have that 1% of the population or whatever that sees a rule and wants to break it. But we just keep it simple. We have a very simple, like, just kind of like a few sentences about how this is an inclusive event. And if you, for some reason, whether it's just, you know, simply feeling excluded or you're made uncomfortable by something, then we please want you to come to us. And we identify ourselves as early on in the process as possible. I mean, with an online conference, that's easy because we're the people hosting at the beginning. But for an on-site conference, Christopher often MCs, so people know who he is, but we go to a lot of trouble at the beginning to introduce, these are our volunteers, and hey, this is Ari, and if we have anybody else on site working, we introduce them as well so they can put a face with it. And if they need to talk to you privately about something, that they know who to go to.
Man, I feel like we've been talking so long. And I mean, it's awesome. I feel like we can keep going on. But before we let you go, I do have two final questions. So what's the best advice you would give someone attending a conference to get the most out of their experience? And then secondly, what's the best advice would you give to a fellow event organizer?
For attendee, I would just say show up. we have lots of fine summits and on-site conferences, but go to a sessions, go to all of them if you can. A lot of people, you know, I see this, you know, before we even start our own conference organizing, people just skip sessions. I'm like, you know, you just never know if that session is going to be mind-blowing. You know, we just recently had Scott McCloud, who in 1993 wrote Understanding Comics. which won an Eisner Award for, like, I guess kind of like the Oscar of the industry. And he also wrote Zot, which won a Jack Kirby Award, mm-hmm. which are like two awards named for two titans in the comics industry. But the Understanding Comics relates to like any visual kind of medium that you have out there. And some people didn't show up for Scott McCloud. I'm like, this is like the most mind-blowing talk you're going to get in these 2 days. mm-hmm. Not to offend everyone else who was speaking and on the thing, but like some people just didn't show up for that talk. And people, you know, I was on that list too. But you know,
yeah, so well, there's different ways to show up as well. Because yeah. frankly, I mean, it's very simple. I mean, everyone in on this and maybe who's listening to this has done it where you're going to a talk. And maybe a few minutes in, you realize, hey, you know, there's a message on my phone, right. or hey, I could open my laptop and catch up on email, right. or whatever. I think that a lot of showing up is deciding that you're really going to be present.
Yeah.
And so for some people that, you know, they completely ditch their laptop during a conference, I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea.
Yeah.
You know, or they decide they're going to go old fashioned and do handwritten notes. I mean, I'm not a huge advocate of any particular approach, but I know that for me personally, when I'm going to see someone for the first time and I really want to take it in, I've, you know, put the phone away. You know, I maybe have out paper and something to write with if something's going to strike me. Yeah. And so I think that that's a very important way to show up as well.
Yeah. And there's something to say about like voting with your feet too. So if you actually there and you're not getting anything out of it, I didn't, you know, I'm not expecting to be chained to your desk or anything like that. So that's what workers for. But also just try out new things. Like the best South by experience I had was back before it got too crowded, was that I ducked into a session and I had no idea what was going on. I just needed a place to sit down and recoup. It was about Second Life. And the first time I had ever heard about Second Life, you know, and it was just it blew my brain. Mm-hmm. There was something called Second Life and doing all sorts of that. And actually South by asked me to write like my top five choices for South by this year. And I purposely went out of a way to find non-web design and development talks and to find interesting things from, there's a panel called Tumor Paint. And some scientist doctor had found a way to help figure out drugs faster for cancer treatment, faster than the last 22 years. Mm-hmm. There's a live mapping projection video workshop. There's a cat on, there's a session on cat video memes. And it's like, there's all this cool stuff out there that's probably not related to your talk, to your industry, and those are just as fine as...
If they inspire you, then that's worth the price of admission.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so I definitely just show up and something. So what would be your tips for a conference organizer?
For a conference organizer, I think I spilled one already, and that was to start small and just to kind of dip your toe in the water and realize, you know, how much interest there really is and that sort of thing. And that's also going to save you on expenses. And I'm still kind of formulating this one for myself. But I will say that you have to give in to human nature a little bit and just kind of understand that it's okay if everything's not perfect. If you have kind of an underlying motivation, like for me, like I said before, it was the helping people kick ass sort of a thing, then people will understand and they'll forgive the occasional slip up or thing that didn't go quite right, or the temperature in the room was too hot, or the food tasted funny, or, you know, they'll let those things go as long as you are clear about your motivation and that motivation helps you make your choices.
Awesome. So before we let you guys go, we like to let our listeners know our guests a little bit better. So we took a cue from inside the Actors Studio and created a list of 10 questions we'll ask each of you. And
do I get to curse?
Yes. Just respond as quickly the first thing that comes to your mind. So are you ready?
Are we taking turns or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
You go first. How about that?
Okay.
Okay. So Ari, Mac OS or Windows?
Mac.
Christopher?
Mac.
And Christopher, what is your favorite mobile app?
Oh, snap. Let me open my phone. I have no idea.
All right. What about you, Ari, while Christopher's looking?
So, I'm going to say Flight Track.
Yeah,
I love that thing.
I'm really into Angry Birds Go right now.
Oh.
So I'm trying to like not pay the money and like try to like play every, like get to every, the ending as fast as I can without giving them a cent of my money. So that's my, like when I'm not doing anything, I am.
Yeah. So, I'd have to say if we're going by the one most often open right now for me, it's Threes.
But, the game Threes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're on that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ari, what's your least favorite thing about social media?
Misunderstanding.
Christopher?
My thing I don't like is it's a mantra that's been pushed around for forever, is the one that be nice to other people. And that's saying, like, you know, when social media first started out, they were talking about, like, you have to be nice to your customers and your consumers and engage them in a friendly way. And I feel like that is the most boneheaded common sense thing. Like, of course you're going to do that, but how can you help me be that? So whenever I see social media stuff like, you should X, Y, Z, like anything about social media that is skin deep and doesn't tell me anything in detail, I guess, really drives me up the wall about social media as an industry.
Listicles, yeah.
Yeah, listicles really just drive me up the wall, especially about social media. So I'm more interested in the technical stuff of how social media works than I am about stuff. Because we actually, not to get sidetracked too much, but we actually try to do a social media summit and I just couldn't pull it off. I was just like, I couldn't find the right speakers to justify a full day worth of content. And that doesn't mean that they're not out there. It just means that I don't, you know, they're not my wheelhouse.
So. Ari, what profession other than yours would you like to attempt?
Oh boy. Whatever career there would be in comparative religion. I don't know if I don't think that I could necessarily be Joseph Campbell, but if I could study all the stuff that he did, so I'd find that interesting.
So a university professor?
Oh, good Lord, no.
And how about you, Christopher?
Well, when I was 8, it'd be a helicopter pilot, fireman.
They mean now.
And, okay. I like Harrison Ford making me so jealous of when he said that there was a quote where he says, like, it's a great job because I don't have to go to an office and work. And I'm like, damn it. Like, I want to go work out office. So I love to work in the movies and just be on set and doing cool stuff like that. So
cool. Yeah. So the opposite. Ari, what profession would you not ever try?
I'm very frustrated by the law, so I don't think that I could do that as a profession.
Chris?
I couldn't be a doctor. I cannot be a doctor whatsoever. You know,
because?
I just faint everywhere. I just like, oh, here's a... I fainted at the subject of inner ear.
Oh, no!
In middle school. Like, yeah. This is like, hey, we're talking about inner ear. Like, okay. I'm going to pass out now, guys.
Yeah, I have to say, one of the first times that Christopher and I hung out, we went to see that Bodies exhibit.
Oh, no.
Where they have the cutaways and everything.
Yeah.
And he only told me right before that he has this problem. And I was like, wait a minute, if you faint, I don't think I could catch you. And so the whole thing was like, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Through the entire exhibit. So. Yeah.
I think they only had 2 benches, too, the whole entire time, too. I was like, I was scooping out benches so I could sit down.
Christopher, who's the web professional you admire the most?
Everyone, including you, the listener.
Not in a pandering way at all. Absolutely no pandering.
There's just so many great web professionals out there. There's Molly Holschlag is probably the one that I feel like epitomizes the nature of the web. She is selfless and giving of her knowledge and time, and she's just a great writer. I don't know how many books she's written, like 40 plus books, well, design development, and so she was very instrumental in helping me with my first start writing book and helping become a better speaker and just everything. So we're really lucky to have her in this industry.
And you, Ari?
I'm kind of racking my brain a little bit, and I'm going to go off the farm a little bit and say, well, I think a lot about what Kathy Sierra says a lot, and I think it drives a lot of my motivation. But frankly, I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit and choose Hugh Forrest because I learned a lot about what I do from working with Hugh at South by Southwest. And so,
what does Hugh do at South by Southwest?
Hugh is the director of interactive at South by Southwest. And I used to be a staffer there. And then before that, I was a contract designer and just worked directly with him. I think just from my time working with Hugh, I have zero problem thinking about, you know, the best way to do something and not really compromising about that at all. And they're, for example, very comfortable with deliberately going out and working to create really diverse lineups there at South by Southwest. And because of that, a lot of the mumble about the difficulty in creating a diverse lineup at a tech conference just completely flies over my head, because I've worked with people who have just no qualms about that and talk about it openly and work to create really diverse experiences. And so, you know, when I look at a lineup, for example, it looks like the same guy over and over again, sort of a thing, and, you know, not to disparage or whatever, I just kind of am like, wow, you know, I just see someone who's having a hard time really kind of paying attention to what's going on in the industry, because there's plenty of different types of people giving different types of talks, and it's not really that hard. to find and create a diverse lineup.
So, sounds good. So, Ari, what music do you like to work to?
Oh, Lordy.
What are the cool kids listening to these days?
Well, yeah, I have a joke that, you know, my kids listen to the wub, 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 you know,
stuff. Dubstep?
And I don't necessarily Dubstep. Turn it off, but that's usually when I'm driving. But the fast stuff, like... I have a work list here that's like, it's got a lot of like Slater Kinney on it and stuff, mm-hmm. where it's like, and PJ Harvey too, mm-hmm. where it's like very driving, getting stuff done kind of music.
Yeah. How about you, Christopher?
So is this getting work done music?
Yeah. Yeah.
I work, I feel very close to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in that he could only write well when he was in the middle of a party. And so it's kind of fun. So I have a ambient noise generator that does like party happy hour type atmosphere, and I just get lost and I can zone out there. Sometimes though, I'm a big U2 fan, so I have a U2 mix I just listen to all the time. And this morning or last night, we saw True Detective, the HBO series, and so we're probably gonna be spinning tracks from the soundtrack from that. So because we just found a Spotify playlist that someone made
of all the songs from True Detective.
Yeah, True Detective. So that's gonna be really great. So
all right, Ari, do you have a secret talent? What is it?
A secret talent? Wow,
you're very patient with me and everyone I know. Like, you're very understanding.
I don't know if it's necessarily. I'd have to think about what a talent would be, but yeah, I've been told that I'm an extremely patient person.
Oh, man.
And that I was a mom before I was a mom.
So, like, between the two of us, she does tech checks, which can be very infuriating.
For Christopher.
For me, yeah, it's crazy. But she does an amazing job of helping new speakers and old speakers get who've never done online speaking before. She does a great job. And that's just a sample of what she does, but ever since I met her, she's been very great at... She has a calming influence around.
Okay, bearing that in mind, I'll say my secret talent is beginner's mind, which I forget what the Chinese word for it, but essentially it's that you can empathize a great deal with beginners.
That's awesome. Yeah.
How about you, Christopher?
Just rock hard abs.
These are laughs of agreement. What?
So where's my secret talent? I have you out. Well, you know,
yeah. Oh, okay. Chris, especially when you work in the same office, comes off as kind of ADD, but he's actually ingesting a lot of information, so I'm not sure exactly what the word for that would be. It's like omnivorous with information and can remember and synthesize a lot of that. And so I think that's where a lot of good ideas for topics for events come from, but also just good ideas for a lot of what we're doing in general. And a lot of times when we sit down to talk about work, he'll have some really surprising suggestions that I think are like, to most people would come off as really left field, but you get this feeling of like, yeah, we should totally do that thing. So I don't know what the word for that is.
Well, I think that kind of relates back to like, if you're a conference organizer or speaker, you need to know what's happening. If you want to submit a talk, you need to realize what people are doing 6 months from now to a year from now. And have your talk be based on that. And
so you're a fortune
when I'm looking
teller.
For speakers, I need to find... Yeah, so basically, I try to, like, divine the future.
Anticipation.
Anticipate the future. So, yeah.
Okay, so Ari, what's the most recent book you've read?
I just barely started the... Again, True Detective. The book with the short stories that they keep referring to with the Yellow King, and I'm spacing on what the name of it is. But anyway, it was cited as really influential for a lot of later writers, and it's I'll try to remember what it is while Chris is talking.
Okay. So what's the most recent book you've read, Christopher?
I read several books at once. So I just finished Zot, which is Scott McCloud's comic book series. It's in a collected form, so that was really awesome. I'm also redoing his Understand Comics after hearing him speak. And then also I have an email marketing book I'm looking at. Also have Parents Guide to Minecraft, which is
random.
I just need to know what the heck Minecraft's about. I'm actually reading that book just to understand it, ranked tutorial, because I'm trying to write a book about GitHub right now, and just trying to find out. And GitHub is such a weird thing right now, is that if you get GitHub, it's really awesome. But from a beginner's mind that we just talked about with Ari, it's a totally different world. Mm. And then it's like, so there's this big cutoff. Like, you go off a cliff with like a swing, I guess, if you will, with GitHub and Git. So once you get Git, then it's easy. But for people who have problems with it, so I'm trying to, hopefully with this, you know, I'm trying to research and see what, with this Minecraft for Parents book, how they handle that.
All right, for our last question, Ari. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Trek.
And Christopher?
I like both, but I probably go with Star Trek.
Very cool. So that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Well, thank you for having us.
Oh, it was great. Yeah.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you guys, where can they find you online?
Well, on Twitter, I am Ariane, but it's spelled A-R-I-4-N-N-E because my name was taken. And then our website that will eventually be refreshed very soon, but currently is in its older form, e4h.tv.
Mm-hmm. And then we're also at e4h on Twitter, but I'm also on Twitter at Teleject, which is a name I came up with years ago, and I'm going to stick with it. So it's T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T. My website's at ChristopherSchmidt.com, but I update Twitter almost all the time. So.
Perfect.
Awesome.
So now we'd like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Squarespace and Pixel and Tonic.
We also want to thank our partners Arcus Tech, Devotee, and EE Insider.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Click Cast, or visit our website, controlclickcast.com.
Don't forget to tune into our next episode when we'll be talking about security audits and integration in Expression Engine with Matt Weinberg. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leia Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Click Cast. See you next time.
Cheers.